Welcome. You're listening to Casually Baked, the podcast, home base for the can of curious. Thanks for tuning in.
It's a hard time. We had a hard time together. Together. Yes, it's a hard time. We had a hard time together.
Hi, y'all. I'm Joe, your host and cannabis lifestyle guide. And today, I have my bestie, the one you know, Dr. V, in the house because it's time for us to talk about vaping. I am getting a lot of emails from listeners who are really freaked out by the vaping headlines of death and lung disease all across the nation. I'm just here to say we can't lump all vaping and e-cigarette products into the deadly category because that's just not true. So I wanted to bring Dr. V in so that we could talk about the scientific facts. Dr. Monica Villalpando is a pharmaceutically trained PhD scientist. She has over a decade of inhalation product development experience across the pharmaceutical, nicotine, and cannabis industries in the USA and Europe.
I got the bottle of wine, the high dollar kind. I got the West Coast smoke, but I better just...
Oh my God, Monica, tell us what's happening.
Oh, God. Well, people want answers. There's people, a lot of people getting sick. There are people dying and we need answers. People are scared, especially considering the cannabis industry where vaping is on the rise. Well, vaping in general, even in nicotine as well. And there's a lot of unknowns, and I see a lot of misconceptions and claims or considerations that are applicable to nicotine that aren't applicable to cannabis-containing vape pens and vice versa.
And of course, we all try to make it easy, like it's just one thing, and so they're lumping a lot of things into one pile. And you're saying all of these things have to be treated very differently.
Yeah, there's just so much going on. Just the action of vaping, just to take it a step back and kind of put my inhalation product development journey into context. So, you know, as you mentioned, I'm pharmaceutically trained. So I worked 4 years for a dry powder inhalation company on formulation characterization. And that's where I really was like, the lungs are so vulnerable. The studies that we had to do to demonstrate safety and efficacy are so critical, say, with vaping versus an oral route, because with vaping, there's no defense mechanism, very little. But it's a very popular form of consuming many products because it's the fast onset.
Yeah, and it's just easy.
Yeah, and so with that, so if you think from the pharma world where you have to demonstrate these things. Now jumping into more less regulated environment and regulations is also something I really want to touch on because that affects safety too.
Absolutely.
But there is only a list of excipients or inactive ingredients used in the formulation in addition to the active compound that we could use. And then I somewhat arrogantly went into the nicotine world like, oh, how difficult can this be? Mm-hmm. And it was just a whoa, like a whole other like set of challenges and considerations. And
so you were the chief scientific officer for a nicotine vaping company in the EU, and you helped create the legislation around vaping there. Is that correct?
Yeah. So I kind of fell into it in an interesting way because before my PhD, so I had my bachelor's in biology and I worked 4 years for this dry powder inhalation company. So to get a really strong experience there. And then I did some graduate school work at the University of Arizona and I worked on a metered dose inhaler. For my PhD, then I transitioned more into oral drug delivery and formulation technologies to improve water solubility. But then after my PhD, I was at Janssen, which is the pharmaceutical division of Johnson & Johnson. And I was reintroduced into an inhalation project because of my previous background. I transitioned over to Manchester for personal reasons, and I had difficulty finding a pharmaceutical job, and money was getting tight. And so I said, okay, let's think outside of the box. And a recruiter said, would you be interested in e-cigarettes? And I was like, no, I want nothing to do with this. This is, no, I will think I would fail as a scientist. Exactly. And the more I was like, okay, let's see what this is about. I mean, I'm curious what I don't know about. So I was like, okay, let's see what this industry is, what's going on. And this was 2014, where the Tobacco Products Directive had just come out saying these are the regulations for this new technology known as e-cigarettes. It was a specific article under a wider range of tobacco products considerations. So I jumped in from a very regulated environment to an unregulated environment. And there's a lot of crazy cowboys in there, in that field at the time, and trying to understand the hardware, the e-liquid formulation, how the formulation works, the interplay between the hardware and the formulation. And then you have to consider things like lung compatibility, so the toxicology of that, in addition to the emissions testing. So there's a whole slew of additional considerations.
Yeah, and places where things can fuck up.
Yeah, exactly. So part of the setting of these is going by what we know and implementing best practices. So I think Europe did it very well in the sense that it is now a lot more regulated. Now I'm talking about e-cigarettes, just to clarify for the audience, because they did take the initiative to implement it. Now the FDA has done that through the PMTA, but it's a lot more complex and a lot less user-friendly. They'll just kind of say, this is what we want you to do, but they won't necessarily tell you how to do it. So to put it in context, so the TPD is about 50 pages, and you have one article, Article 20, that talks about e-cigarettes. From that, you had like the British Standards Institute, AFNOR, which is the French regulatory authorities, working together and building these standards and considerations. I want to be like, there's a CEN, which is a European Standards Institute. They created a new spinoff for vaping and broke it into three categories in hardware, e-liquid formulation, and manufacturing, because all of these things play a role into the safety of that product.
Absolutely.
And so now, if you were to purchase a e-cigarette in Europe, it's gone through this notification process where you have to disclose everything that's in there. You have to show research around inhalation toxicity. There are things that are flagged that are a big no-no. And levels that you have to stay under. So this is all demonstrating that. Now, during my transition into cannabis, I leveraged my experience in e-cigarettes, of course.
Yeah.
But part of, like, as I was building my business, I still worked in e-cigs, and I was helping companies in the U.S. sell in Europe. And so a lot of these unknown, these harmful things they're not known to them. Again, people don't know what they don't know. And I think, you know, the U.S. was a little bit later to put in these proposed regulations.
So you're saying that the stuff that you guys were already doing in the EU, when you started consulting for these U.S. brands, they were still putting all this shit in there that they had no idea that was toxic and they shouldn't be
correct.
Using.
Correct. And a lot of them still do.
Obviously.
Because no one tells them they don't need to. And yeah. One of the big misconceptions or headliners.
One of the headlines?
Yeah. One of the headlines that I see related to THC, or sorry, just keep it cannabis because this affects CBD and all other cannabinoids, but is that, oh, popcorn lung, and that's from a compound known as diacetyl, and that gives a really great buttery, custardy, flavory notes. That issue is applicable to more so to nicotine-containing e-liquids and not cannabis, where we're not really putting flavoring agents in there. So we should be looking at these problems completely differently, but at the same time, there's a lot that we can take from what's already been done to make these products safer and streamline this process. And yeah.
Right. And because we know how sensitive the lungs are and how inflammation can affect our immune system or whatever, like knowing those things, it would make sense that they would be flagging as much shit as possible, trying to narrow this down. Like, it seems crazy to me.
Yeah, well, it's also hard to predict. So a lot of these ingredients, we mainly just have oral data on them. Again, inhalation is another beast.
But so, yeah, because that was one of the things I wanted you to explain, is how these ingredients, now after they're heated, how they transform into something else. So can you explain how that all works?
Yeah, and that's what makes it such a challenging product to develop if you really want to understand what's going on. Because there, one aspect, it's okay, so you have this e-liquid formulation, or, you know, THC containing products. I keep saying THC.
Really, that's what the issue is right now. They're blaming vape juice, and they're blaming the street THC vapes. And actually, they're not even saying street. They're just saying THC vapes. Yeah. And so that's another red flag that's been waved through my email from people saying, like, hey, can you let them know that, like, the stuff that they're buying in my dispensary is not the same thing?
Yeah. Yeah, even I'm saying, just all I'm hearing is THC, but I think this is a problem that affects all cannabis-containing vape pens, or considerations that we should address, and we can jump into some of the specific ingredients that, you know, mainly vitamin E acetate, but there's other considerations there and things and research that's ongoing and some interesting findings. But
so that walking through that process of, like, you put the vape juice in your device, you heat it up.
Yeah.
And so then what's happening to all that stuff?
Absolutely. So first you have to think about, you know, how is this e-liquid manufactured, formulated? Is it in a clean room? Is it in a warehouse where there's some particulates? You know, what are the cleaning procedures between equipment that they're using? So that's, you know, that's getting more and more mature. So that's starting very in the kind of the basics. But if you consider, okay, there's the hardware e-liquid or cannabis liquid compatibility consideration. So wicking, temperature effects, airflow, all of these things influence the safety of these formulations. So that it doesn't just necessarily stop there. It goes into, okay, now you have a number of ingredients in here. What are potential chemical interactions that can occur? Because also by virtue of heating the formulation, you're promoting, you're speeding the onset of these things to happen.
Well, and that's the other piece, you know, that I just want people to understand, is just how when you're THCA, when you heat it, it burns, it turns to THC, which is what's intoxicating. This molecule has literally ship-shifted into something else. So if you've got vegetable glycerin or propylene glycol or this vitamin E acetate, then surely this same shit is happening to those things.
Exactly. So you, in it, because there's a lot going on, and the industry also doesn't have the sophistication for all the characterization techniques to really dig down deeply to fully assess. Maybe some groups that are doing it, I'm not aware of any right now. But I believe that probably given these recent reports, people are on it. But in addition to that, there's also the biological interactions to what excipients you use, the solubility, the compatibility with the surfactants in your lung is another consideration. And then finally, you know, after you've inhaled, then there's the exhale. So what are you exhaling? How much does that affect the people around you? All of these things are important considerations. And I think where people in the cannabis industry are really missing the mark is the biological aspect of it. I see so many people say, you know, we don't use diluents. That's great. But if you are using a diluent, most of the times I see...
And a diluent being to dilute the...
Yeah, sorry. Okay. So because the cannabis extract is...
Just little old me over here just trying to figure it out.
No, because it's so viscous.
Okay.
And then you'll have problems wicking it into the, there's a ceramic coil now, but back in the day, we started out with cotton wicks, which were based off the e-cigarette design, but these are completely different physical chemical behavior. But it just took China a little bit longer to catch up to the cannabis requirements and technology for obvious reasons. But
China's its own fucking problem too in this.
Well,
thing.
I mean, you have, regardless if it's a nicotine containing e-cigarette pen or a cannabis, it all comes from Shenzhen, China, yep. essentially. So, yeah. So again, this isn't a perfect example where the cannabis industry can learn a lot. And so from the nicotine industry. And so we've collaborated with companies like the Blink Group. So Arno Rumastali, he and I worked together in the nicotine space, and he was also on the forefront of setting these regulations. And he's over in China all the time, monitoring, ensuring there's quality and consistency. So there are definitely bad manufacturing facilities or good manufacturing. And that's right. Regardless of you're in California or yeah. you're in Shenzhen.
And whatever industry
exactly,
you're in,
exactly. Where I get really frustrated is the fact that people will say, manufacturers say, oh, it's all natural. We are no PG, no VG, this and that, and no PEG, no diluent. So I'm like, okay, I get that. But we use MCT, medium chain triglyceride, which is, it's a lipophilic material. It's a compound. We shouldn't be putting triglycerides in our lungs anyway. So I've told companies to not include it, and they don't listen. It continues to get sold. So I said it to enough companies that just ignored it. I said, okay, well, I need to start generating more data, because this is like, right. No one's going to just listen to little old me.
I know.
I'm like, yeah, you know,
this little pixie with curls in her hair. She doesn't know what she's talking about. I will give you data.
So as a result, I started collaborating with Portland State University professor Rob Strongen, him and his, he has a PhD student, Jirius, and it's been really, really great. They had already started looking into the space and, you know, providing ideas. I think you should look into this. This is my hypothesis. And there's a brand new paper that just came out. But going back to the MCT, I will talk about that paper in a sec, but I want to like build up to it. I can see you're like, don't jump around.
No,
I'm just
fine.
Like building up the...
good.
So there was a paper that came out of a group in Arizona that looked at the emissions from PEG, propylene glycol, vegetable glycerin, and MCT. And they're like, oh, because MCT resulted in the less volatile organic compound formation, it's the safer one to go with. And
not
just,
that it was good. It was just the safest
it was just
of all
safer,
the...
Well, it, that's what you should use, because unlike PG, it had all this formaldehyde come off. But it wasn't a level playing field, and actually it was a very poorly designed study. You could pull that from, you can just go on the e-cigarette world, because they had to provide that data anyway. So it wasn't very novel, but the cannabis industry took it as, oh, I can use MCT. But going back to the reason it's not a same playing field is because you have different boiling points. So PG, propylene glycol, has a much lower boiling point than MCT. So if you take them up to the same temperature, you're going to have more volatiles out of something that's going to degrade at a lower temperature. So that was their basis of it being safer. But by no means did they consider like what it could do to your lungs. So while you might be, we're seeing now with vitamin E acetate, there's a lot of, you know, these reports are now popping up. Different excipients can also have different impacts on this toxicity. And it might not be as profound as vitamin E acetate, but over time, this is something you should consider. I'm going to parallel it with yoga. When I'm giving instructions and you're misaligned, you do it once, 10 times, it's fine, but you continue doing and doing and doing it over years. That's when the serious damage occurs, and it happens so slowly you don't even realize. So it was really based off more the overuse of MCT in vape pens. MCT, just to clarify the audience, is perfectly safe for ingestion in your tinctures
and your morning
and your
coffee
couple.
And what all that it's stuff great. That everybody's
it's wonderful,
been doing.
But
that bulletproof diet.
Just because you can eat it doesn't mean you can heat it up and vape it. And it's just one of those things. And I still continuously get pushback. I said no to a specific project involved putting certain additives in a vape pen. I said the amount of work you would need to do to me give that product my blessing, it wouldn't make it worth marketing that product. So I think that the industry, especially in the vape arena, where it is becoming more and more competitive, people are trying to find differentiation.
Yeah, yeah. What's their niche? What can they do different?
Yes, yeah. Like be very, very careful. Extremely careful.
What about these, like,
that,
you know, these terpenes and things like that? The smoking terpenes. And
That's kind of leading up into the work that we're doing with Dr. Strongen is leading, and we're collaborating on in some future projects. While terpenes are present in the cannabis plant, you know, they're at a certain concentration.
Yeah, a very low concentration.
A very low concentration. So one of the things that I had hypothesized was the concentration of terpenes that people are putting in these vape pens is way too high. So the industry is motivated to put such a high concentration in there, well, for flavoring agents, but also their thinning agents. So instead of using MCT to dilute and improve the viscosity of the cannabis extract, you could add terpenes to have that same effect. And then you say it's all cannabis derived or all from the plant. So, but you have to be careful there. And if you go too high, and I've been fortunate to look at and see, you know, from the research of inhalation toxicologists saying like this specific terpene should stay below these levels, this specific, and they're different. So then compound it with a terpene blend, and things get a little bit more hazy and confounded, especially if you think you take one terpene with a boiling point of 80 degrees Celsius and another one with like 180 degrees Celsius. You can imagine there'll be some other considerations involved there from a safety standpoint. So,
and well, when I always think about smoking a vape pen, because you know it's not my favorite, I mean, it makes me cough every single time. It's like it burns, it's spicy in the back of our throat. And you know, and they're like, oh, it's the terpenes. And I'm like, yeah, certainly it's the terpenes. However, every single time I'm belted over, like coughing, I'm like, something's not exactly right, because cannabis doesn't do that to me. Flower doesn't do that.
Yeah, agreed. Having looked at the hood under both types of products, I'm more likely to pick up a nicotine-containing e-cigarette in Europe than I am a legal cannabis-containing vape pen in California.
That's pretty big words.
And I love flower. Mm-hmm. I enjoy flower. I enjoy my products that I've worked on too. And I enjoy cannabis, but unless I've looked under the hood and I've kind of seen what this company has done, I've seen more things that I find shocking than I would say, okay, yes, I would do this.
So how is someone, because, you know, clearly we're in a buyer beware market. So, you know, someone who has been just reliant on the vape pen, and that's what they like. That's what, they've got kids, they don't want the smell of the flower, whatever. And so what do you tell people like that?
Yeah, no, it's a good question, because it's hard to trace the practices of the manufacturers, or from a consumer standpoint, they might not want to disclose too much. But so what a consumer should look for one, let's start with the hardware. Let's look at, you know, is this going to be a pod that you're going to add to an existing hardware like a PAX? Well, in that case, then you would want to look more into the pod itself. But given, or your other standard 510 cartridges, the screw-on, you'll want to look out for a number of things. Is it diluted in something? Are the terpenes derived from cannabis or from food grade?
And to know if it's diluted in something, what are those ingredients that you're reading on that?
Ideally, it should be cannabis extract and cannabis derived terpenes.
And that's it.
Food is also fine as well. I just, for more of a whole experience.
Well, wait a
experience.
Minute. We're not talking about food. Where'd food come
food
from?
Food-grade terpenes.
Oh, I was like, what the fuck are we talking about? Yeah, I'm like, so, I mean, not even high.
From a scientific standpoint, if you compare a terpene from cannabis, a terpene from food, chemically they're the same. It's just kind of the fingerprint that makes the terpene profile. How do I explain it? I explained it as you can go to Paris and look at the Eiffel Tower, and you can go to Vegas and look at the Eiffel Tower to look pretty much the same, but it doesn't have like the finer nuances that it has. That's how I try to explain it.
I think that's a great explanation.
Because sometimes when you're trying to mimic the terpene profiles from the cannabis plant, you're limited based on the analytical techniques that were used to identify that terpene profile. So you lose some of the finer details in it. So that's where the the comparison goes into. So, but going back to it, it's very hard. I understand the frustrations and the fear of the consumer.
Was there a certain style of pod or the battery that seems to be better than the others, or that is not showing up with crazy testing?
Yeah, I mean, so what I would look for is what kind of coil are they using? Is it a cotton wick? Is it a ceramic coil? Because that's going to influence the efficiency of your product.
Is anybody using cotton wick anymore?
Yeah.
They are?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. I'll tell you after the show. So that's one. But hardware is, you know, we're getting some pretty cool devices coming out. So when I consider my time and the papers that were being published when investigating nicotine-containing products, there were clinical studies showing differences in absorption of nicotine, the exact same nicotine formulation, but it was dependent on the hardware. So that's another reason that device formulation compatibility is incredibly important.
Well, and then that also helps me understand more why there are so many different devices popping up on the market right now. You know, Absolute Extracts is partnering with on that DART device. That I think it's great. And then Hanu Stone's got their thing. And so, yeah, I keep wondering, like, okay, why are people creating more shit? But I guess if it's, you know, they're working with their particular oil, just trying to create that best experience and make themselves stand out from everybody else.
Exactly. Yep. The other thing I think is critical to look at is the material used that's in contact with the cannabis extract. So I mentioned the coils, but also, are you using plastic? Are you using glass? You know, these terpenes, they can interact with the plastics and result in extractables and leachables. And in some of the cases, you could see I've seen products where the plastic is cloudy, and that's like,
yikes.
Yeah, it's terrifying.
Yeah, it's like back in the 80s when we'd like heat up cheese dip in a bowl. You pull it out and there's like the actual plastic is melted in the cheese dip and you're just like, you know what? Fuck it. Your dad's really going to hate all the F-bombs in this show.
Oh, I've been cursing like a sailor lately. It's been intense week.
You know, I just think, yeah, as long as I'm putting good content on either side of it and making a delicious sandwich out of the F-bombs, I mean, it's worth it.
But another thing that's really important to me, and I think it should be important to consumers as well, is packaging. So I mentioned materials, but then secondary packaging or how the product is being displayed and marketed. Again, these products come in either glass or plastic, and I've 99% of the time they're clear. So cannabis and terpenes they'll degrade. Due to exposure to UV, to light,
air,
oxygen.
Yeah,
yeah, exactly.
So that and
the clouds of smoke that billow out of my space.
You can have water ingress occur too if you're living in a humid environment. So these are things that you can consider. So more about like if they're just displaying it there clear, you have no idea how this product what this product is now compared to what they sold it originally with. So for example,
Label may not match what you're actually
not anymore. So imagine that I am a vape manufacturer and I want to make it an alert formulation, you know, you're awake in the morning in the mood. And I put it in, you know, let's say, okay, I put it in glass, but I put the external packaging in just plastic and it's out there, it's on the shelves. But when I first, you know, just sold it, it's here's my C of A, it, you know, these, this is what it meets. And then as you go a few months later, you might be dealing with some CBN and your formulation doesn't work like as an awake formulation. So these are things that matter and that I really want people to start thinking about. But of course, thank you, Joe, and educating, because there's a lot to learn in this space. Even just within this topic, there's so many things that we can discuss and avenues and misconceptions.
Yeah, totally. So when you walk in and you're shopping, the fact that you can even see the cartridge to see which one, the color of it or whatever, that's already bad news. Because it's exposed to the elements, so to speak.
You have to think about the source and who you're buying from. Like, how much do they really understand and appreciate the plant if they're going to, like, downstream and manufacture it in such a manner?
Yeah. Yes, I appreciate that. I appreciate that perspective. Well, so let's talk about then someone who isn't as fortunate as we are to go into a dispensary and they still have a drug dealer. So, you know, I know people who have drug dealers who those people make trips to Colorado. You know, they're bringing back product that looks to me like it's quality product that was made by responsible people with a certificate of analysis. I mean, this shit looks like the real deal. Now, in Canada, the stuff that is legal, it looks like medicine. So you can easily tell the difference between stuff that is legal and that's been, you know, labeled safe versus the gray market. Here we can't really fucking tell, because I don't know if that stuff was actually approved or whatever. And so now I'm just like fearful for all of my friends who love vaping so much and they don't really have a way of knowing what it is they've got.
I think the most important thing is understanding what's in that formulation. So if companies...
We're not talking about companies now. We're talking about the fucking South where you're getting it from a drug dealer. Well, like what? I mean,
unfortunately, that's the risk that you're taking. And I wish I had better...
Well, no, I mean, that's important, but that's okay. Tips. That's the reality. That's the truth.
I think I would study what reputable brands are doing and asking a lot of questions and looking for the ingredients list. And 'cause a lot of times I can kind of get a sense by looking at a product, getting a sense and maybe even trying it. But knowing what's being done right, so you can better identify something that's done wrong.
I'll tell you what I'd do.
You tell me, Joe.
And I'm not condoning other people do this, but I would certainly look up an old friend or a family member that lives in a legal state and plan myself a fucking road trip. Or, you know, I'm just not willing to take that risk. So I would make a road trip, go on a trip, go to a dispensary where you know you can get something that is at least good and you can follow Dr. V's buying tips. But then get three or four of them, take them out of the packaging, put them in your backpack and head home. And then you know that you've got enough to last you for a while that is good. And you can at least chill the fuck out with some peace of mind instead of, I mean, the thing that's supposed to ease my anxiety is now going to give me anxiety because I think it might kill me. Like, what the fuck is that about? That's stupid. So, you know, don't like go buy a dozen and, you know, get popped for like fucking intent to sell. Just like, Be reasonable. Yeah. Don't be, what's the word? Stingy?
Stingy. Well, also, if you're coughing like crazy, that's well, your that's body like, telling you something too.
Well, and I only use a vape pen when I'm traveling.
Me too.
Just
and I only
make myself
use it
do
from
it.
Like a few brands.
Yeah. Well, and I'm terrible about breaking or washing batteries. So I've got a lot of cartridges with no battery home, so I could actually send you home with some of the ones you like. Okay. So well, one thing we should mention is that like this has gotten to be such a big deal that, you know, Trump recently announced that he was going to move to ban most e-cigarettes. I think probably anything that was like flavored. Is that right?
Yeah.
And then,
or you could just regulate it a little bit more simply.
Well, but you know, they're living in a situation where I was around teenagers. I really kind of appreciate the fact of like, you know what, let's just fucking cut this back to where it was.
Understood. It's a very controversial topic.
I mean, I watched kids go nuts before my eyes.
Yeah, no, it is a pity. You know, Han Lick, who invented the first e-cigarette, did it as a means, as a safer alternative, because his dad died of smoking. And so the basis of my experiences is in the UK. Mm-hmm. And there it was very much pushed as a tool to help quit smoking. And you could do that by decreasing the nicotine concentrations. Another thing that the TPD did was cap the nicotine concentration.
Mm-hmm. Because there's like one pack of smokes in a pod.
Well, it's not that. It's not that.
Well, that's what they advertise.
Of course. And
I mean, that's the company saying, hey, this is equivalent to a whole pack of cigarettes.
Back when I was in my last company or working for the e-cig company, I got in a fight with the marketing guy because he tried to make that claim. I'm all, we have no data to prove that. It depends on nicotine concentration, takes on absorption. It has different, like, it's, you can't just say 100 or one pack equals this. Like, that's just total bullshit.
Okay. And it one pod will affect each person differently too.
Yeah.
Is that what you're saying as well?
Like
because of our own body chemistry and, or is it just, you're saying you haven't gotten to that point in the science to be able to.
There's a number of factors that play a role into it. So if I smoke a Marlboro or a Camel, I might have a different like nicotine uptake profile in my blood. So there's other considerations. The same, it's like one cigarette is not, you know, they're all different. Obviously, that's why you have different brands. So that's one reason you can't make that direct comparison. And then on the e-cigarette side, you have nicotine-containing e-liquids with different concentrations of nicotine. So if I'm addicted to nicotine and I, you know, get my fix off one cigarette, that might necessarily not translate so clearly. What translates for me and what the vape pen that I use will not translate for the other person too. And just the way that you smoke a cigarette versus you would consume e-cigarette.
Yeah, you just
exactly.
take a couple of puffs.
It's a self-titration versus you go outside, it's 2-minute thing, you get a bigger like spike up in nicotine and then you get a faster crash, which is what makes it so addictive versus with e-cigarettes, it's been very successful. And I hear a lot of people, not adults, who quit smoking as a result of switching to e-cigarettes.
My mom did.
Yeah. And so, you know, there's, and within that world, you have different cultures. So you can have the cloud chasers. These people just like making these big clouds and
they are obnoxious.
Yeah. Yeah.
They're the ones that are using the vape juice.
Yeah. They just like, and it doesn't even have nicotine. It have very, very low nicotine in there. They care more about those
plume.
Exactly. Those formulations have high glycerin in there because that forms that bigger plume versus, or you could go the people who start at a, you know, 20 milligrams per milliliter and go down to, you know, whatever, to zero. And so in Europe, that nicotine concentration is capped. And in the US, it's not. So, you know, there's a pragmatic way to implement regulations. You know, right, over-regulating is also not a good thing either. And so I think this whole like banning it all right without kind of understanding and pulling the problem from its root is what I don't disagree with. So yes, there's a lot that we don't know, but actually going back to your point about the teenagers, that's not something that I experienced on hand, in the UK, but I did hear, actually talking to my buddy, he did say there was more and more of those popping up. And yeah, I think it's horrible. But kids would be smoking anyway. I picked up my first cigarette in like age 14. And then, I mean, luckily I didn't get addicted to it. So I'm not saying like, well, they're going to pick up something, so it might as well be e-cigarettes. That's not what I'm saying at all. But it's terrible what they're doing. But in part of that high addiction and in Juuls, right? And we're talking about Juuls. Well, their nicotine concentration is what, 50 milligrams per milliliter. And so, well, now they had to cut it down for sale in Europe. So that's another reason American kids are dealing with what they're dealing with.
Yeah, they're turning into little beast monsters really fast because the concentrations are higher.
Yeah. And I think that there should be some flavorings allowed, but demonstrated to be safer inhalation. Because if you want to look at e-cigarettes as a tool to quit smoking, you're going to want a little bit of a flavor in there because nicotine just doesn't taste very good.
And I think that's part of the reason why they're like, if we take all these flavors away, it won't taste good. Kids aren't going to want to do it. And there is a lot to that.
I agree with that rationale, but then adults who want to quit smoking don't want to do that, and then they'll just go back to smoking.
Yeah, because it's like, I think they want to have just like plain and menthol. But I think the big piece to all of this is also educating these kids about, this is what you looked like 3 weeks ago.
Oh, yeah.
This is what you look like now. This is your future. You know, it's kind of like that stupid, this is your brain, this is drugs, this is your brain on drugs that we had to listen to all the time. But that was bullshit. Like, this is us showing scientific facts and research, because now that stuff's being done, right? And Governor Newsom just earmarked $20 million for a youth awareness campaign in California. It's like, our goal is to reduce youth vaping consumption.
Understood. 100% agree with that. But it has to be situated in a way that can still facilitate adults to enjoy this experience. Think of drinking.
Yeah, certainly. You know? We don't fucking have kids. It's like, not my problem.
Well, I mean, I don't consume nicotine. I've worked with it. I sampled what I've, you know, the nicotine contained? Yes, of course. But do I consume it? No. But I do know that there are a lot of people that have benefited from it. And going to the point again, when you implement the right type of regulations and you get together as an industry and come up with these best practices and have different subject matter experts touching on aerosol, inhalation toxicology, manufacturing, then you can provide a platform for safer products. And so that's why I think it's important to look at really the state of the e-cig market in Europe versus the U.S. Because in Europe, they were a little bit more, they were more proactive in implementing this regulations. And trust me, at that time, there was a lot of pushback. Anytime you stir up the pot, you know, there's always a little bit of a...
Absolutely.
But it eventually settled out. And the biggest concern then was like, oh, these small mom and pops wouldn't be able to survive. But those that did it right and did it properly, they're still on the market. And I think the same model can be applied to cannabis-containing products. Like, I'm not saying all diluents are bad. I'm not saying you can't put terpenes in there or food-grade terpenes or whatever. I'm saying you should study or do the research to know that it is, in fact, safe. And look to other industries, not even outside the nicotine space, where you can take inspiration from building these regulations.
Yeah, I absolutely agree. And you are a rational, logical, intentional voice behind it. And I appreciate that. I always try to leave people with a hopeful message. Do we have one? If we're in the elevator heading down and somebody's asked you on the 10th floor, tell me what's going on with the vaping thing. A couple of sentences. What should people do right now?
They'll only get safer because people are now starting to pay more attention to it.
Okay.
There's more data coming out, the more research. Given the background, it's been a very busy week with all of these reports.
Mm-hmm.
And it also, because I've come from a pretty unique position, it's been shifting my focus a little bit more intently on this. And I started building up those pieces, reaching out to Professor Strungen. But yeah, it's just people paying attention and other industry experts chiming in too.
All right. So buyer beware, but
they will
hopeful.
Get safer. Absolutely. Yeah. 100%.
All right. Well, thank you for sharing your voice. I appreciate you always and forever.
I appreciate you too.
All right. Now let's get casually baked. I'm not so sure our conversation made you feel better about the vaping scare. But like Dr. V said, it's only going to get safer from here. In the meantime, it's up to you to be a savvy consumer. Dan in New Jersey wrote to me, "Hi, Joe. I love your podcast, but I've been freaked out over these vaping illnesses and was hoping you could talk about what you know about it. Vaping has been a godsend for someone like me, whose situation depends on discretion. But now it will apparently kill me. So I threw out all of my carts because I live in New Jersey and they were all purchased illegally. I'm crushed not just for me, but for everyone else who found vaping THC to be the perfect way to live their lives free of the judgment of those who wouldn't understand it anyway. I know edibles are the logical solution, but you know, totally different animal as far as dosage and timing goes. I wish everyone in the cannabis industry had a heart and soul like yours." Oh, Dan, me too, buddy. Thank you for your email. I do think there are a lot of cannabis lovers in the same boat as you. From my almost 23 years of experience and with everything that I now know, the number one rule I can share with you, it's old school, but it's to trust your source. Don't buy black market vape pens, period. Off the street, from your dealer, on the dark web, or from some rando on Craigslist. The next rule is to double check that shit, even from someone you trust who you've been buying pot from forever. If you don't live in a legal state, then you better know that what you're getting is coming from a clean and reputable source in, say, Colorado or California, or some other legal state near you where you can look up a certificate of analysis and read the ingredients of your particular batch number. If you can't do those things, walk away from vaping until you can. If you don't think you have time for those things, walk away from vaping. Remember, it's not just the actual formulation that matters. The hardware used in manufacturing process each play a role in the safety of your favorite vape pen. Bottom line, there is still a lot of research to be done before anyone can really say with full certainty what constitutes safety in such a young industry without years of data to examine. An alternative to smoking and vaping for you, Dan, is to make infused cannabis oil at home and consume it sublingually. Don't put it in edibles. If you're looking for rapid symptom relief or instant gratification, using an oil under your tongue will give you a faster onset than trying to dose yourself with edibles. If vaping cannabis or CBD is your favorite method of consumption and you're lucky enough to live in a legal state, make sure you know it comes from a licensed dispensary with a verified certificate of analysis that you can review that came from a third-party lab. I highly encourage you to find cannabis companies that produce single cultivar, full-spectrum products. A local favorite of mine is Chemistry, made right here in Oakland. They do just that. They use small batches of sun-grown flower by some of Northern California's best craft growers, several of which I've had on this podcast. The nuanced flavor and the effect of each strain is captured in the Chemistry vape cartridges with no fillers. Check out trychemistry.com to see the list of sun-grown farms and strains they work with and where you can look into shopping their products. I tell you this a lot, but I'm going to say it again. It is your responsibility to navigate what goes into your body and how you show up in the world. And when it comes to your cannabis for wellness lifestyle, I am so happy to be here to help you. We had a hard time together. When you learn something valuable, I encourage you to lead by example and provide quality information to your personal community. You can start by sharing this episode of the podcast with friends and family members who vape nicotine, hemp, or cannabis. You can learn more about Dr. Monica Villalpando and the things we discussed in the podcast 106 show notes at casuallybaked.com. Send me your can of curious questions or concerns at casuallybaked.com for inclusion on a future episode of the podcast. Socialize with me on Instagram, Facebook, Twitter, and YouTube. I'm at casuallybaked. And if you appreciate Dr. V's insights, you can follow her formulation team at VLP_lab on Instagram. And I certainly hope you'll explore Voices of Harvest. It's a podcast bonus series I'm doing this fall that I created to celebrate two of my favorite things, the craft of cannabis farming and the art of storytelling. Happy harvest, y'all. Puff, puff, pass it on. We had a hard time. Casually Baked, the podcast, was created, recorded, and produced by yours truly. Editing and sound design are in the capable hands of Arnav Gupta. The podcast theme music is by my highly talented friend Seth Walker. If you aren't familiar with Seth's music, you can find High Time on his album Gotta Get Back wherever you're buying your music these days. I know he didn't create High Time for me, but it sure as shit sounds like he did, right? I hope you'll tune in next time. Thanks for hanging out.